This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to the first 2021 Property Show on the Morning Run, and I'm Sim Wee Boon. According to the National Property Information Centre, or NAPIC, the property market's performance recorded a sharp decline in the first half of 2020. Not surprising given the economic situation brought about by the pandemic. Now, in Q3 of 2020, NAPIC noted some improvements, but with the COVID-19 cases spiking and a cautious economic outlook for 2021, what is in store for the property landscape this year? Well, joining us on the show today to unpack this and give his take on what the property industry went through in 2020 and his outlook for 2021 is Sarkunin Subramaniam, Managing Director of Knight Frank Malaysia. Good morning and a happy new year, Sarki. Now, I want to start with 2020 and what did you think were the biggest lessons learned by property players last year?
Happy new year and good morning, Sim. I think in 2020, the biggest lesson that anyone learned is never to overgear and have reasonable buffer and have cash reserves to then take advantage into any distress or any rising sector during such a crisis that we went. I think the number one lesson is never overgear. The number two lesson is diversification. Never to be overexposed in one sector. If you had been overexposed in the tourism or the retail sector, you would have actually suffered quite a bit. So diversification and is also another big lesson property players must have learned.
With every crisis and every hardship come, there are winners and losers. You know, maybe you can give kind of like a run through of like who were the winners and losers of 2020 in terms of a property player's perspective.
Okay, definitely the winners were in the industrial sector, manufacturing and also logistics sector. The winners were also in the technology sector, such as data centers and whatever that was required for to be connected during the pandemic. The winners were in the pharmaceutical and in the health and well-being sector. Of course, the other winners are in the glove industry and the mask industry. Those are the winners for last year. When it comes to property, the winners were generally, like I said, the logistics sector predominantly.
When you said the winners for the logistics sectors, in terms of a property perspective, did you see an expansion of industrial parks or industrial buildings? I mean, is that why you've seen them as winning or gaining ground?
No, what we definitely saw was the need for logistics warehousing space because of the growth of the e-commerce sector. That we definitely saw. So there was quite a number of leasing and take up and building of such nature, such buildings. And there were also people going into developing data centers. Quite a number of pieces of land were bought and purchased to build data centers to cope with the growth in the bandwidth and the need for what he calls data centers. So therefore, we saw that reason why the manufacturing and the industrial sector leading growth last year.
And who were the losers? Who lost out and who kind of like had a lot of challenges last year then?
The greatest challenges was definitely in the tourism sector and definitely in the hotel sector. I mean, they were the ones who really lost out quite a bit, and also retail to a certain extent. As you know, people couldn't travel and accommodation was not needed. And therefore, we saw hotel occupancy rates really drop and a lot of them had to close down.
Do you think these closing down of these hotels and everything, I mean, does it create a market where you have seen it become a buyer's market more than a seller's market when it comes to property transactions?
No, quite a number of these sort of distressed assets were did actually were in the market, and some of the valuations is nearly 20-30% below its original pre-COVID values, and we did see some transactions happening where people coming in and waiting for the fact that the post-COVID, that people will travel. I mean, you know, and we did see that as soon as MCO was lifted, you saw all the resorts everywhere in Malaysia full. You couldn't get rooms in Langkawi, you know. So it was, you can see that the pent-up demand will be there. So if you could hold on, you hold on. If you can't, then you will have to let go, you see.
A lot have been said about how the pandemic has really hit hard on services industries, on industries like F&B and eateries and everything. But at the same time, just as we've seen restaurants close down, I've seen a lot of restaurants open up. Is it a function of because a lot of restaurants have closed down and the landlords are looking to move the empty lots as soon as possible, and a lot of good deals are coming out in terms of getting more people to rent these empty lots, especially in areas like mature areas, you know, like PJ, Bangsar, mm-hmm. KL and whatnot?
I think what we must see is people wanting to go into businesses, because a lot of people didn't have a job to do. Many people lost jobs, and they had been given some compensation, had some savings. What do you do? What next do you do? So I do believe I have some friends who just say, okay, I think I'll start a restaurant or a F&B outlet of my own, which caters towards what do you call it? As long as Grab food is there, or you know, food delivery is there, they can still survive very well. So they went into that. So some of this retail space have been letting quite well, you know. But of course, the rents are a little bit lower. But nevertheless, because of that, there is incentive for people to go and take up some of the space and set up business.
But in terms of pricing, in terms of this retail space, was there a big shift in pricing? Even not even renting, or yeah, probably even buying and selling.
It all depended on where the location of the retail lots are. In good locations, the retail rentals really didn't come down very much at all. In other areas where it was a bit more struggling areas, new areas, yes. Not like you said just now, PJ, very established areas, but in the more suburban areas, we did see a downward shift in rentals up to even 30%.
Okay, so in general, location is still pretty much a big prime factor for any price trends, even in 2020.
Definitely, yeah.
It's the same reflected in residentials then? The same trend, the same kind of observations?
Yes, residential, of course, the more established areas, they did also come down slightly in value last year. And we did see some downward pressure. But when it came to other areas, suburban areas, where developers were launching, because the discounts were very good, and we found the housing ownership campaign did very well. So the prices there with the discount was a little bit cheaper. And of course, people went in and buy in those areas. So established, like I said, established areas did hold on to a certain extent, but there was definitely downward pressure.
Okay, but so would you say that the Pengana initiatives and the government initiatives helped to cushion the impact of the pandemic to the property sector? Because I remember we had a conversation during budget, and a lot of the suggestions you've made before the budget was tabled, I didn't really see it being put into the budget. So, I mean, what do you have to say about government initiatives as a whole to cushion and help the property players?
I think one of the greatest initiatives they took was the loan moratorium. I think that saved a lot of people. A lot of people were saved because they didn't have to pay their loans for more than 6 months. And then subsequently to have that selectively given by the banks to people who really in need. I think that was the greatest initiative. But when it came to the SME loans and I think it was somewhat limited. And in that sense, it didn't really reach out. There were, as you know, so many SMEs closed down. That that part of what the government wanted to put out didn't really come out effectively, I felt.
All right, we're going to take a short break right now. And, you know, after this, we're going to continue our conversation and look forward on what's in store for us in 2021. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned into The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon, and with me today is Sakrinan Subramaniam, Managing Director of Knight Frank Malaysia, on the show. It's our first 2021 property show on The Morning Run. And earlier in the show, we've been kind of like taking a look back at the highlights of 2020, the challenges, the winners and losers. Now we're going to take a look forward at what the year has in store for us. So Saki, I want to ask you, I mean, what's the on-the-ground sentiment that you are hearing from property players? Are they generally optimistic about 2021, or, you know, what's the feel that you're getting at?
Generally, people are thinking... Most people are thinking the worst is over. Things have really come down, and this is going to be the real bottomed out situation. But they know, many people know, for the first half of this year, there is really going to be very gradual improvement. And I think what many people anticipate is after the second half of this year, it will do better. So even our GDP is predicted to, last year, 2020, our GDP was negative, between negative 3.5 to negative 5.5. But this year, they presume that people have predicted that it will go up to 6.5% because of the slowdown last year. So I believe the most of this will actually come through towards the second half of this year rather than this first 6 months.
Okay, but what about you then? You know, these are the other people's sentiment. What do you think 2021 will look like?
I totally agree with that. I do believe that we will only see some recovery towards the second half of this year. In fact, I believe the first half of this year, we may not even see a gradual improvement. It will just be holding on until recovery slight recovery towards the second half of this year. It all depends also on the vaccine, the availability of the vaccine and how it's going to be dispensed. There has to be some concrete plan on this rollout of this vaccine as well.
Okay, and what would be the key drivers and kind of like key points to hold together this view that you have? I mean, you know, what needs to be set in place to make sure that, you know, we have a quiet first half and then a gradual recovery in the second half?
I think, like I said earlier just now, I think we need to have a concrete plan. The fact that once the vaccine rolls out and hopefully we get over this COVID situation, the tourism industry will move rapidly, I would think. I think the tourism sector, people, the pent-up demand to travel will come right through and hotels will be full. The pent-up demand to shop, retail will do well towards the second half of this year, provided, of course, we roll out our vaccine and we get COVID under control. That is the most important thing. And with that, everything else will recover.
Okay, let's touch on a bit of tourism first. We were talking earlier about how the pandemic has affected tourism and, you know, hotels have been closed and whatnot. I mean, if all else goes well and the vaccine and everything does open up our borders and the tourists do come back, is there going to be a mismatch of supply and demand? I mean, would we be able to have the facilities to cater to the influx of tourists that we're having? Of course, this is a very optimistic stance taking this view, but, you know, just want to get you gauged because it's a very curious thing, right? You know, closing down a hotel is something that can happen so fast, but opening up a new hotel is not an easy task, I feel.
I think we do. We will be able to cope because a lot of these hotels that have been temporarily closed have the ability to immediately get up and go. So I think as far as hotel accommodation and all that, we should be able to cope with the the demand towards the second half of this year. I would think as far as retail is concerned, that also can easily be set up and restart again. So therefore, I believe as far as supply situation is concerned, no need to go and build more hotels or build more retail centers because there's enough supply to cope.
But can we expect more though? Because, you know, we do know that even before the pandemic hit on early 2020, there's already a lot of projects in the pipeline. And I think this year in 2021, we will see, you know, TRX and a lot of these very much promoted commercial buildings to really go fully operational. And I'm sure property players out there, you know, when they hear the news of a good vaccine and good economic sentiments, they're going to take out their plans to kind of build four more shopping malls out there. I mean, are we just going to fall back to the same issue of like having too many retail space again?
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of developers are a lot wiser now. And I think what we will see, yes, you're right, the revival of some of the projects that have been put on hold, potentially. But I don't think people are going to go out there and build more shopping centers just because the demand is there in the second half of this year. But I do believe clearly that revival will be there.
That's good to hear. But what would you think will be the biggest hurdles for the industry in terms of recovery in 2021? What could, like vaccine aside, what could derail these recovery that we're hoping for?
I think one of the biggest hurdle in Malaysia particularly is the stability of the government. I think this has to be there in order for us to attract foreign investment and in order for us to build. That stability is very, very important. And we must remember we're an export-dependent economy. So when there is recovery and our export grows, definitely we'll do better. So that is also very important. The other thing that is important, good news is that our commodity prices are increasing, which will help our economy. So I would put my finger on, if you were to say a hurdle, is the stability of the government and the rollout of the COVID. That is the biggest hurdle that we face.
Okay.
Rollout of the COVID vaccine, sorry.
Let's break it down sector by sector. Do you see different sectors in the industry outpacing the industry side? You know, in terms of commercial versus residential, new properties versus secondhand or, the secondary market, which one will kind of get a leg up and which one will take a much longer time to recover?
One of the most interesting things that I've seen is my research department is getting quite a number of work from developers for market study, feasibility studies, to impress bankers to get end financing, and that's what I can see. A lot of developers are planning their launches, and I think residential launches will come in. I think people will start investing in resi. Although some commercial, as far as concerned, leasing activity will increase. Because people will realize, okay, I can reduce space, I can move to some better place and pay even lesser rent. People will make decisions. You see, during this during 2020, a lot of decisions were put off by many large corporations. When people start making decisions, that's when the market will move. So this year, by the first quarter of this year, 2021, we will definitely see people making decisions and move, and therefore leasing activities may be actually improving. That's how I feel the way the market will be.
Okay, but in terms of, I think the one thing that people want to know, you know, when it comes to this is, you know, launches and whatnot, is the prices. I mean, are we going to see the same type of pricing mechanism where it's usually a bit out of reach for the average Malaysians, because that's very much, you know, the complaint when it comes to affordable housing and affordable residentials. They're just not that affordable. You know, a lot of developers, they aim for the 600,000 to 700,000 mark and above when it comes to launches. In fact, there's even sizable ones that are 1 million and above. Are we going to be expecting more of that? Or do you think, given what has happened to the pandemic, given the economic situation and what is done to kind of like a lot of the pockets of Malaysians, they would recalibrate their pricing?
Yes, certainly they will. I've seen developers who used to build houses at terrace houses at 1 million plus 1.2 million, are relooking at design, relooking at areas to develop where they can build and sell houses between 500 to 900,000, which is where the most amount of demand is and affordability is there for the middle to slightly middle upper class who want to buy, who has the money to buy.
And what does that mean for those who have bought properties in this period and are looking at the value of their property, hoping for it to increase? You know, is that affected? I mean, I'm not saying that they are speculating and selling, but, you know, I mean, the expectation that comes with you buying a property is that, like, year on year, there will be somewhat of an increase. Will we see this being stalled? Will we see this going as normal? Or is it location dependent?
It's location dependent, but people who are buying houses today is not looking at capital gains predominantly. It's mostly owner occupation. And also people who are buying in places where they know they can get good rent, reasonable rental, and yet get a yield better than putting their money in the bank. Very few purchasers out there really, really think of immediate capital gain. I mean, long-term capital gain is another thing altogether.
And that's all the time we have for today's property show. Thank you for being on the show with us, Sarki. That was Sarkunen Subramaniam, Managing Director of Knight Frank Malaysia. I'm Sim Wee Boon, signing off for the morning run. We've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned, PFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.